By way of introduction, I would like to say that the United States of America remains a strategic and an important economic partner for South Africa. Our relations are managed in line with South Africa's national priorities. It is important that South Africa take advantage of the U.S.'s recovery from the economic recession to further deepen our trade and investment relations. We also welcome President Obama's preference for diplomacy and negotiations in resolving global conflicts and for supporting Africa-led initiatives in resolving conflicts on the African continent. Our engagement at the U.S. African Leader Summit will end up securing the best possible outcomes for South Africa and the African continent. In this regard, our trade and investment relations, as well as U.S. support for peace, security, and sustainable development in Africa, featured prominently during the high-level engagements with President Obama, Vice President Biden, and senior congressional leaders, as well as during engagements with key American CEOs, chief executive officers, and business leaders from major corporations and companies. Both President Zuma and Minister Rob Davies put forward a strong case for the renewal of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or as it is commonly known, AGOA, and were able to convince the U.S. administration and key congressional leaders about the importance and benefits of AGOA for both Africa and the United States of America. The highlights of the summit was our president's address to the National Press Club, which was televised live. If you have a little understanding of American politics and society, you will understand that the National Press Club is one of the most powerful organizations in the country. President Zuma was able to tell the good news story of South Africa's 20 years of democracy to an influential audience and also use the opportunity to respond to questions about South Africa and Africa. It is on record, Chairperson, that during this interaction with this influential audience, President Zuma responded to 18 questions and did so off the cuff without notes. As you may know, the U.S. African Leaders Summit was the first ever gathering on this scale by a U.S. president with African heads of state and government, and is built on President Obama's visit to South Africa and Africa in June-July 2013. The summit itself is an endorsement of the Africa Rising narrative and elevated the profile of the continent among key political and economic decision makers in the U.S. government and private sector. Jefferson, I'd like to pause here and recall an anecdote that was relayed to me by somebody who attended the summit. He was sitting in a taxi in Washington, D.C., between venues, the driver, an African-American. And the driver engaged him, and the driver said to him, "Today, as an African-American, we are extremely proud, because today, for the first time in the history of this country, we have African leaders full in this town, and for the first time in our history, our people are at the forefront." Chairperson, African leaders were satisfied with the outcomes and strong benefits of Africa and reiterated the need for intensified cooperation to advance shared security interests and common goals to increase prosperity for Africa and the United States. The leaders further underscored the importance of ensuring focused follow-up to the commitments made at the summit and a deepening of partnership between the United States and the people and governments of Africa, as well emphasized the importance of coordination with the African Union. Chairperson, with your permission, I will now hand over to Mr. De Beer to provide you with the details of the key summit engagements and outcomes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I would like to start off to say that we have a presentation on this for the committee's perusal. As Deputy Minister Lander said, I think this is this event was the outcomes of the visit of, it's one of the issues that President Obama committed to when he visited South Africa in June, July last year, to say that he will have an Africa Leaders Summit. He indeed delivered on this, and the summit took place between 4 and 6 August of this year. It is actually the first time that on this scale the African leaders went to the U.S. to engage the U.S. authorities and the president of the United States. I'm supported by my colleague Arnold Lyle, who actually went to this event. So, Chair, with your permission, if I do stumble, then I will ask Arnold to stand in and just clarify some of the issues. Thank you. I would like to start off to say that the key engagements that we had in the USA, the South African delegation, was first of all a U.S. Chamber of Commerce event where our representatives from BUSA and from BDC, the Black Business Council, were present with our ministers of transport and of science and technology, and they participated in a panel discussion on foreign direct investment, our national development plan, infrastructure, and South Africa's economic outlook. This took place with several senior business leaders at the event. Secondly, the U.S. Africa Business Forum was an opportunity where that took place on the 5th of August, and the President Obama invited investment in the key sectors of energy, infrastructure, mining, and agriculture. He also emphasized the need for beneficiation and industrialization. Sorry, I meant our President. President Zuma invited investments in these sectors. This occasion was also used by our President to market our national development plan and to address issues related to South Africa's legislation on security, companies, and on mineral rights. This forum granted the opportunity to African leaders to engage CEOs of large companies and major corporations in many of the sectors such as energy, finance, capital investment, ICT, consumer goods, and agriculture. As Deputy Minister Lander said, the next event was the address to the National Press Club. Now, this is, of course, a collective of prestigious journalists and communication specialists. And the President actually used this opportunity to take questions and to tell the good story, the good news story of South Africa. It's actually for us remarkable that at this event our President off the cuff engaged in more than about 15 to 20 questions from the audience on many issues, always using the opportunity to put the good news story out there. It's also quite significant because it's exactly 20 years since our first Democratic President, former President Mandela, engaged this very specific group of people, the National Press Club. So the event had quite a significance for South Africa. Of course, that event was also used to promote our views on the AGOA, as Deputy Minister Lander said, African Growth and Opportunities Act. The next event was actually the AGOA Forum, where our Minister of Trade and Industry, Mr. Rob Davies, did very specific input and active participation to look at, to promote our views on how the AGOA should be renewed. And the language we used there was actually to say we want this to be done seamlessly, timelessly, and unconditionally. AGOA will come to an end, as we know it, in 2015, and we would like to see then the Congress in good time
promote the renewal of GOWOM as it is unconditionally and seamlessly, so that we can continue to benefit from that program. I think it's important that at this meeting, both the president and the administration of the U.S. government supported the idea that AGOA be renewed, and with the members that we have in it, of course, including South Africa. However, we should note that it's not up to the president or his administration. Of course, there's a lot of work to be done in Congress. It is Congress that will eventually approve this. Then the next event was there were several signature events that took place on the fringes of this leader summit. Some in science and technology, infrastructure, open governance, wildlife conservation, and I think what is important is to note that our Minister Naledi Pandor gave a keynote address at the symposium on science, technology and innovation, economic growth and development in Africa. She did that on the 5th of August, and then of course we had several other ministers, including Minister Deboe Peters, who attended the transportation event as part of the signature events. That event took place in Chicago already the end of July to the 1st of August, 30 July to 1st of August. So those events were also then used to promote the main elements of our national development plan. Important is the meeting that our president had with Vice President Biden. Our president was actually at that stage traveling a lot, and he was he used the opportunity to indicate that he's willing to meet, but that his schedule is quite busy. And Vice President Biden actually visited then President Zuma in his hotel. We should note that it was only South Africa and two other countries that were engaged by Vice President Biden, namely Nigeria and Tanzania. So the other African leaders met with the Secretary of State, not with Vice President Biden. A meeting with members of the Congress, this was of course very important, and in an effort to make sure that we engage the right people in Congress, President Zuma met on 5 August with the chairpersons of the Senate Foreign Relations and the House Foreign Affairs Committee, that is Ed Royce and Mendes, as well as with the Senate Africa Subcommittee, Chris Coons. These people are very important and key in the whole AGOA dialogue that takes place in Congress. I'm going to briefly, those cover the main events that we witnessed in this summit. I would like to just concentrate on some of the main outcomes. As you know, probably know, Honourable Chair, this was a summit that we are not really used to this format. As Africans, we engage China in the FOCAC and Japan in the TICAD, and you know, also the EU summit in a different way. We have a set agenda. We try to agree prior to the meeting on the outcomes of this summit, and the declaration on the things we commit to. However, this summit was different. There's no agreed outcome, and of course President Obama engaged pretty much in the fashion he thought was fit to address African leaders. So we had, prior to the summit, decided that we will see to what extent we can aim and formulate what we would like to have as African group of ambassadors in Washington. From the summit, namely in trade and investment, the AGOA issue, peace and security matters, how the U.S. approaches those issues on our continent, and then of course governance, sustainable development, which includes issues like education, health, and gender empowerment. So if I could briefly reflect on those outcomes, of course, as I said, the AGOA is an issue that is important to many African countries. It provides duty-free access for a range of issues to the U.S. market. For South Africa, again, this is important because we talk about value added exports. We export to the USA in highly value-added fashion, which is good for our job creation goals. So the Agoa for us is important. It also, if we look at the way that we source from the rest of Africa to provide these products to the USA, then South Africa's inclusion in this program is something that we see as rather important. On the energy issues, there's a Power Africa initiative in which we asked President Obama to have a more inclusive and a more regional approach to this issue. He, of course, indicated that there will be an additional $12 billion committed to this program. And, of course, South Africa at that stage was not included, but they indicated that Power Africa will most probably or will establish their head office, their headquarters in South Africa, despite not having any projects here. Of course, as I said, the marketing of the NDP, of our National Development Plan, the National Growth Path, and our IPAP, Industrial Policy Action Plan, those elements were all involved, specifically when President addressed the 150 CEOs and business representatives in the U.S. Africa Business Forum and also in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce event. Then the African investments on the continent, President Obama announced $33 billion in U.S. and private and public investment in Africa, with $14 billion expected to come from the U.S. private sector. This will support economic growth across Africa in sectors such as banking, ICT, infrastructure, construction, and clean energy. Together with Coca-Cola, the U.S. also announced a $7 billion fund for the new Alliance for Food Security and Nutrition on the continent. Peace and security. African leaders made a compelling case for the U.S. to support African-led efforts to secure peace and security on our continent and lobbied support for the African Sandfire Force. President Obama responded by committing $110 million over 3 years to support African militaries to set up rapid response forces which will support AU and UN peacekeeping missions on the continent. There was also an announcement of a security governance initiative which will involve six partner countries in the African, namely Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, Mali, Niger, and Tunisia. This is to support the strengthening.
Can the chief editor just repeat that stuff again? It was just a bit quick.
Thank you. So there was an announcement that the Security Governance Initiative will commit $65 million for the initial year to strengthen security institutions in six partner countries, namely Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, Mali, Niger, and Tunisia. There's also a commitment for an additional $70 million to provide equipment for peacekeeping missions in both Somalia and the Central African Republic. In acknowledgement of South Africa's leadership role on the continent and South Africa's own success in conflict resolution, Vice President Biden made a special appeal for South Africa's intervention in various conflict zones in Africa and the Middle East. This came out of the discussion between our President and Vice President Biden at our President's hotel. Briefly, on the issue of sustainable development, specifically as they relate to education, health, gender, and youth empowerment, the U.S. administration pledged an additional $200 million aimed at doubling the number of children receiving antiretroviral therapy in 10 African countries, and that is, of course, under the PEPFAR framework, the PEPFAR initiative. also arising from the spousal forum that took place, various U.S. companies pledged support for women entrepreneurship, women in agriculture, and scholarships for female university students. As you know, when we talk about students, the U.S. launched the YALI, which is Young African Leaders Initiative. That was now renamed during this summit as the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program. And we should note that President Zuma argued for a more inclusive approach to this fellowship. President Obama announced the expansion of this program to create regional leadership centers on the continent and an online network of educational tools and to connect young leaders with one another and with the youth. Those were basically the main outcomes. I think in terms of the way forward, the African leaders was able to ensure that the summit laid the basis for a refocused and deepened Africa-US relationship that acknowledges and builds on Africa's own institutions, our own initiatives and progress in bringing about economic growth, sustainable development, peace, security, and prosperity to the people of Africa. The African leaders actually stressed the importance of effective follow-up mechanisms to ensure that the commitments made are actually implemented. President Obama undertook to make the summit a recurring event, which we see as perhaps the shaping of what would be his own African legacy. Chair, with your permission on that note, I would like to conclude for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, the DDP. Is there any addition you want to make? Honourable Member, can I hear from you whether there are clarity-seeking questions, comments, recommendations? And I will cut everyone to have the first bite, followed by my La, followed by Mokalaba, Kalian Leo, Kalian then.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to welcome the presentation made by the department. And then the observation, Chairperson, is noting here is that, of course, I agree with the department and the Deputy Minister that that summit was very successful in its own way. It was very successful because it highlighted the issues of Africa. But what I'd like to read, Chairperson, in moving forward, I was a little bit disturbed, not a little bit, I was very disturbed by the omission of democratically elected leaders of the African continent. I think that was the weakness of the whole summit. Because we might have, America might not have loved President Mugabe to be there, but he is a democratically elected president of Zimbabwe. I think that was the low point in the whole issue. Yeah, that was the low point because it got into his position through an election. No, I think that one should have been respected. But what is also Chairperson, when coming to this issue of the outcome of this or of the summit, really what Chairperson would like to appreciate is the work done by the South African government in ensuring that the issue of AGOA is maintained, because that Africa Growth and Opportunity Act is very important for the development of the African continent. But what is also important out of that is that South Africa must continue to be a partner or a member thereof, so that it must be recognized as a beneficiary of that. Why just do I say that? Because really, South Africa is almost like a gateway to the African continent for a lot of companies. I can make an example. Those come and pick up like Ford. They sell a lot of cars into the African countries. Those cars are manufactured in South Africa. It would have been very bad that South Africa was going to be excluded from AGOA, whereas the U.S. companies are using South Africa as a base to advance towards the African continent. I think that one is very important. I think that that issue must be pursued. I think that even if the department did something, because there's something which is very important here. From our history with America, we know that President Reagan declared the Gulf Party a terrorist organization. But the people on the ground in America, they supported the people of South Africa. That's why they ensured that the sanctions were imposed against the apartheid state. So I'd like to say that we continue to interact directly with the people of America on the ground. Because those are the decision makers, those are the people who are able to turn around. It's true that eventually the decision is going to be taken by the Congress. That's why that I really appreciate the fact that the President, the delegation was able to interact with the Congress, because at the end of the day, those are the people who are going to make decisions. And then on the other issue,
I would like to suggest that because it's a question, it's time for asking questions and clarifications. Committee members, political committee members, must concentrate on the area, and then once we have, so that the committee has a time to address our concerns, but to deliver personal opinions on what we think about this. It's not helping us to get an opportunity to ask the people who are there and let them talk to us, instead of telling them what is good about what they did. We can do that perhaps at the end.
I'm not accepting your point of order. What is happening is that the honorable member is commenting on the U.S.-Africa relationship, but is also making observations that at a personal political level, feels like is a weakness, for instance, the exclusion of the other. So I think because you won't come back, so you just included everything else. Because the chair did not say, I only want questions. I said clarity seeking questions, comments, recommendations, etc. So proceed, Mama.
Thank you, Chair. All the other issues, Chair, which I want to raise in. Thank you for your protection, because this is a political committee. We have to express our political opinions thereof. That cannot be dictated by other people. Chair, on the issue of the Young Africa Leadership Initiative, we also appreciate that the delegation of South Africa wanted more inclusivity. But the question which I'd like to ask, Chair, is that Yali has been renamed as Mandela Washington Fellowship. I don't know whether the Mandela family were consulted for the use of that name, or the Mandela Foundation has been consulted around that. Because I think that I think it's like an intellectual property. It's like an intellectual property. I think that must be respected. I don't know if that process was done. But what I also like to support here is the outcome of actually supporting the Grand Inca Dam project. I think that as part of the infrastructure development of Africa, it is very important that the outside countries support our projects which were initiated by us as the African continent. That's why that part of the Inca Dam project support is highly appreciated here. Thank you. That's right for my sister. Come back there. It's time around.
Honorable Mayela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think most of what I want to say was said by Honorable Khadebe, but I would also like to appreciate the presentation of somebody's department and maybe make an emphasis on the importance of the extension of AFO, with also South Africa as a beneficiary, because the contribution that this award has done to the continent cannot be overemphasized. They are very important. And another issue, the observation that the President made on the Young Leader Initiative, that it should be inclusive, is also very important, because we need to know exactly what criteria is used in
selecting these young leaders, and we also need to know why they are not. Because we don't need to be surprised when they come back or when they don't come back, because we need their contribution in the continent. Lastly, Chairperson, I would like to also to indicate that it's encouraging to learn that the USA supports the capacitation of the African standby force, that's recognizing the solution of African problems in the African way. Thank you very much.
Honorable, thank you very much. Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also thank my colleagues. And
welcome, Dali.
Thank you.
And echo their sentiments of welcoming the presentation. I think this was one of the historical moments and of a game changer of relations between Africa and the U.S. And I think we all know around this room that the purpose of this was to counter the influence of China in Africa. And then one thing that is of note is to say there's been a lot of commitments that were made by the U.S. to the African leaders. But like they always say, the detail is in the devil's in the implementation. Now, I see that when it comes to implementation, we have relegated, or the forum has relegated, the implementation into the low level of ambassadors. Because of its follow-up, the AU and African ambassadors group in Washington to coordinate follow-up action to ensure focused implementation of commitments. Now, there have been quite a lot of commitments that were made here in terms of trade and in terms of peace and security, which needs high level follow-up and implementation. Has that been given priority? Because I don't think that such a high level commitment should be followed up by the ambassadors. I think there should be a forum of heads of state that should be able to follow this one. I know that the implementers are other people, but in terms of making sure that concrete implementable commitments are being followed up. And there's been a say that this conference was just about economic diplomacy and focusing on peace and security and trade relations and not focusing on other issues like human rights, like the growing concern of global terrorism and cybercrime, all those other issues, socio-economic issues were not, socio-political issues were not focused on, but only economic and trade relations. Well, that's why I make a statement that it was seen as a move to counter the influence of China in Africa. Is that the feeling of the delegates to this forum, to say that this forum was mainly focused on trade and peace and security, which, by the way, is not to say that they are not important and significant in Africa, but there were other certain issues that we should have focused on that we haven't. And most importantly, they're making sure that the follow-up implementation and with the commitment that has been done. And lastly, on the issue of this commitment that came, did it come with conditions? Because we always talk about the solutions for Africa-led initiatives. But we all know that the one who plays the piper or plays the music, the one who pays, he plays the music. So this thing of saying U.S. support for Africa-led initiatives, what does it mean, actually? Did it come with conditions? One thing that we know is that there's no free lunch. So there's quite a lot of freebies that have been committed to here. Can we hold to that? What were the terms and the T's and C's of this commitment that were made? So it's two parallel issues. One is the T's and C's, and two is the implementation plan. Thank you, Chair.
Akbar Kalyani.
Thank you. This is a very interesting presentation. But I'd like some clarity. The Stafford Summit focused on girls' education and other things, but did it deal with any gender issues and women empowerment? That's my first point of clarity. What does no graduation of any country, slides are not numbered, renewal of AGOA for 15 years by October 31, which is a short while away, but what does the wording with no graduation of any country mean? And then on the same page, clarity on what does the reauthorization of the GSP which has expired, what does that mean? Words are nice, but you need to be more specific about it. Under the development issues, we want to lobby support for the Africa Common Position on the post-2015 development agenda. Was this about the whole NDG goals? Did it include climate change? And we covered to a degree about the YALI in terms of renaming it, and you went quite fast, so I got stuck about President Mandela something program. What has YALI been renamed? And then the criteria, I think one of my colleagues has already asked who would qualify for part of that program. Power Africa is establishing its headquarters here. What is, and my colleague has covered it, what are terms and conditions for South Africa? We know that it's creating jobs, but what are the other terms and conditions? You know, like Africa, South Africa hosts the Pan-African Parliament, but there are lots of obligations for South Africa as the host country. So just clarify what the obligations there are. Okay, and my last question, is the PEPFAR program in South Africa still running? We are creating new programs in the rest of Africa. I know that it was quite successful here. Is it still ongoing and has the funding increased? Or I know as a result of the economic crisis that there was not much money coming for the global aid. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mosfani.
Thank you very much. Yeah. You know, I wanted to start by saying that I was concerned when the chief director started to refer to the fact that the vice president went to the president because the president, and you're asking yourself, is this supposed to be something that we must say is an achievement because Biden went to the hotel of the president of South Africa? I don't think we must reduce an entire delegation of continental leaders who go to Washington and they think it's a favor to just go to a hotel. You know, that is really reductionist. I don't think we must present in that fashion because Biden was not doing anyone a favor by going to the hotel of President Zuma. And I think it's, you know, it just reduces the fact that because what concerns Mitchell is the fact that we were so excited because the Deputy President of the United States went to a hotel when the whole continent went to Washington. And we went to Washington, and I want to appreciate what Oliver Hanover was saying about the exclusion of presidents, democratically elected presidents, the escalation, for example, of the president of Morocco, who continues to oppress and subject the people of West Sahara, when we as South Africa have a chairperson of the African Union. We didn't get a part here that said, what is a clarity? Because we have got standing resolutions in terms of how we relate to the people of Western Sahara. And acknowledgement of the right to self-determination. And then you have an issue of democracy that, which means that the issue of the summit based on governance does not respect African governance and African democracy. Now, what was the deliberation? Yeah, it was nice that the Honorable Minister Naledi Pandor was presenting and everyone was presenting. Tell us, what did they present about their exception? Because in the summit rules or whatever criteria the Americans constantly place on every time they invite us and they give us conditions on the invitation, what is it that he clarified about those who are members in good standing? We know that Morocco excludes itself, and yet Mugabe, who is a deputy executive chairperson of the AU Executive Council, is excluded. What presentation did South Africa make on that? I'm curious about that. I take it very emotionally because when we speak about Obama supporting and resolving conflict in Africa, is he not also perpetuating the same conflict in Africa? What did we speak about the role that the U.S., because here there is something about lobby support for the reform of the U.N. Security Council. I wanted to get clarity to the extent of the detail of the reform of the U.N. Security Council, particularly the role that Africa plays, and how have we been able to then say, I don't know about resolving conflict in Africa. I want clarity on the extent to which the resolution of conflict in Africa is based on what? Where does the conflict emanate from? Who are the initiators of that conflict? The issue of the China factor comes in. The extent to which the protectionism over the African continent has got absolutely nothing. You must get total clarity on that. Because the program suggests that, look, there were a lot of discussions, but it also said that there were no outcomes that could be confirmed. What then becomes the role of our ambassadors having to have done the same groundwork? What then was the point of this summit? I'm concerned about, the same thing of the president addressing the press club. Let's not look at those things as being achievements. You know, you can tell anybody how wonderful you are. If they don't believe you, they don't believe you. That is the reality. We must be able to say that this summit then yielded to what development, because it is correct when the Honorable Mkhalapha said that you only see issues of trade and peace and security. Now, my question goes on to that point. Peace and security, because I was asking about countries and I was looking at what are the interest areas in these countries, what are the potential our problems in these countries. You know, Nigeria is highly conflictual around the Niger Delta and the other challenges that are experiencing, the issue of terrorism, etc., in growing in the continent. Now, I'm asking a question. Does this not... But, you know, I read the one point here about the force. Talking about the force. It's something that's an African force. And I'm asking myself, you know, to what extent are we compromising ourselves by assuming that we don't have sufficient protection in the continent or capacity in the continent itself that we need to militarize Africa to the United States? What interest is the United States hold over Africa and its resources going to be so forceful that it comes in through military power? Because the issues here that have been discussed in this, the outcomes have been, you know, you can't talk about the first spousal meeting about girls. We'll never know how many girls, what benefit. Over when we came here, there's been many controversies around schools that we have established. Don't lie to us about support. We don't want to hear about what support do we need. I mean, the issue about support was, I was just laughing to myself because I said by now, we don't know how to promote gender balance and youth empowerment in a political process. We are one of the nation's forerunners. The Americans have been looking for a model of maximizing and massifying youth involvement in politics, in particular the democratic politics in that country. And then we need to tell them, we don't need their support. What are we giving, what are we saying, all this we can give you? The best practice model in terms of how this must be done. I mean, that is not an objective, it's not something we need from them. What concerns me about the issue of power? Why are we establishing a head office? Because I understood what the Deputy Minister said was that we are establishing the head office, but they're not part of any initiative on Power Africa. So why are we establishing a head office when we don't have an initiative here? What benefit is it going to have to us? Do we have the kind of constant... I think I just want some clarity around that issue. I'm concerned that this must still go through the Congress process. I would have assumed that Congress would have been in a position to say, this summit is the thing, okay? And then these are the things that as Congress we are going to make sure we approve prior. But you don't have a situation of having to now still look at, I don't know why I'm being interrupted by honourable members chair and I'm not being detected. These are the initiatives and these are the commitments that we are making. I want to re-emphasize that the issue of security in Africa is something that we shouldn't have found ourselves, because I just want to find the identities. Invite UN support for Africa-led initiatives such as African Standby Force. And, you know, those are the kinds of words I think that they speak volumes in terms of the intention of the summit. It says to us that when it comes to the kind, we don't need food security. Food security and the fallacy of U.S. aid in terms of food security in Africa is a long outstanding resolved issue that we all know. Africa still remains highly undeveloped, in a state of poverty, high levels of inequality, with all the support that we have had from this so-called aid initiative that has always been there. So please can you tell us what really happened in the summit? How are we really going to benefit? This issue of Yali, I agree that we can't just use the Mandela name in vain. But equally, who does the kind of selection? It can't be Mandela Washington, and then we still don't know what becomes the value add to this nation after these kinds of scholarships. Why is it that there's not more reinvestment in our senses of excellence than to assume that the only place you can get an education that is quality education is Harvard? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Isabella, followed by Kathleen.
Thank you.
Just two questions I'd like to raise. Now, when AGOA was first introduced, most of us thought that all African countries that were committed or keen to participate would be. Of course, as politics happens, over time we saw that there were times when some countries were included and sometimes excluded, and then again included, and so on. Because it always follows the level of relations between the countries that are involved. Now, we know that AGOA will be extended next year, and Congress could not have approved it before the end of before the election of this act that is in place. Now, by the time it is renewed next year, conditions between the U.S. and Africa and different countries of Africa would have changed here, adjusted there, etc. And one of the reports that was that came out of Washington, I still think of the report somewhere where one of the reports indicated that some of the members of Congress, lobbyists who are very concerned about the issue of AGOA, put forward the condition that they will support AGOA extension on certain conditions. One of those conditions that those two of those conditions that in that report cited was that countries that will be allowed to participate in AGOA must be countries that are below a certain level of development and therefore that can benefit and must not be so developed as not to really need that privilege. The second condition was that, in terms of that report, was that such countries that will be allowed to participate must not be so beholden to China as to constitute a competition partner. But, first of all, I'd like to know whether the department can confirm that in fact that there were Congress members whose outlook, whose view is that these two conditions must be satisfied if they are going to support inclusion of any of the African countries. Because they were saying that with those two conditions, any country that did not satisfy those two conditions, they would not, in their view, be included. And I'd like to know whether that can be confirmed. But linked to that, I'd like to know whether, in the light of the development of Fortaleza, where we became part of the new development bank and so on, was there no concerns raised by the American Congress members, etc., with regard to this? Because it's going to go a long way towards determining to what extent South Africa can be part of, and can be included or not. For the moment, I'd like to really raise those, I'm concerned about those two issues. But it seems to me, if I may just add this one sentence, my view is that if you look at the five countries that constitute the, that are part of the BRICS and therefore the New Development Bank, especially including Russia and China, to a lesser extent, India perhaps, but it seems to me that coming out of Fortaleza, and you look now at the US-South Africa summit, that in fact, we, South Africa, have moved back to the Cold War politics, in which we have committed ourselves to the Eastern Bloc of old, vis-a-vis that, because the US and the West, the Old West, if you like, remain largely there. I'd like to have a sense of what the department's assessment of the situation or first experience and assessment of that. Because that really concerns me. The world has changed drastically since the collapse of the Berlin Wall. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kota.
Thank you. Thank you. Apologies for coming a little late. I would assume that this is a kind of outcome of long ongoing years of diplomatic relations and having the U.S. come to this point. And so I would see this as a positive for South Africa, having glimpsed some of the work South Africa's been doing in the United States and bringing us to the point. I was actually in the United States at the time that we were discussing around Goa and actually saw how much that we had actually been putting into that situation and bringing that to the point that it's come to. So I think it's great. Obviously, investing in the next generation is something that I would see us in South Africa as clearly wanting to be a part of. My understanding is that this is a big world. The United States could be holding summits with any leaders from any part of the world. And in this particular instance, we got them, in a sense, to hold the summit with these leaders from Africa. So I would just like to bring the sense, which I haven't heard from my colleagues, that we could have said no, and we can say, keep your money, keep your friendship, we don't need you. But many, many other people in the world are going to take that friendship with both hands, and they're going to make the best of it for the people. So what's in the interest of the people of South Africa, this is clearly, on the face of it, and I'm sorry I missed the presentation, in the interest of the people of South Africa. The format being different to the Africa summits with China, EU, and the fact that there's no agreed outcome document, I missed obviously the presentation, and it would be interesting for me to hear that negative, positive, just interesting, what's the importance of that comment. The fact that there was a respect for not inviting countries that have been suspended by the AU, I would have thought was a good thing. And I should imagine that there's budgets on any summit and that there's targeted people. So that doesn't concern me. I'm very pleased that peace and security, good governance, democracy were key. The security and that the security issues were actually on the table, because obviously we do know that Africa is in a situation where we are very concerned about how we, and the fact that the United States, which is a different thing,
were really positioning themselves to kind of step back and say, you take the lead on this, but know that we're here. I would think that that is a huge work that South Africa has been part of bringing into the space. So, again, I'm perhaps a comment on that, but I didn't hear the presentation, and thank you. I'm interested in the response.
Thank you very much. When credit is to me, where it's due, I think, well done. Well done. You see, when you are in international operations, you are walking on a tightrope. Sometimes you smile when you didn't want to smile. But this time, you get your job. At least there's a hope that AGOA will be renewed. I want to say thank you very much to you and your and to the politicians. I understand that you are not happy with one or two things, your bank, like perhaps some people are not invited here and there. Sometimes you have to bite the bullet in certain cases. But I say, I must say, main thing is to say congratulations for the good work that you're doing, and you have done it well at the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ramphuti.
Yes. Yeah, I just wanted to say really thank you for the presentation. And then, thank you very much for the presentation. And I think this was the first ever summit for the African leaders, despite that Zimbabwe was not there. I think it's just, you know, a blank on our side. And even, you can hear even the heat after rising. I think that was an excellent kind of initiative. And especially on the Salsa Summit, whereby, you know, the focus was on the young girls. But if we can really get what we were discussing about, yes, the focus was on education, global health, and economic opportunity for small entrepreneurs. But if we can look at the document to peruse and, you know, and take it further. But that was an excellent presentation. And then really, as South Africa, I think we are making a lot of inroads, you know, in the global world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, the hair is already disadvantaged, still as members have commented very cogently and eloquently on a whole range of substantive matters. I don't think I have a question, but it's just a very short comment. And it is that the issue of Africa rising is very important for the leadership of the African continent to ever be alert with regard to in whose terms, in whose interest is the African continent rising. Because the continued exportation of raw materials to other countries, including the United States, with little beneficiation for the African continent would not be a good thing in the long term. It has not been already. Just by way of an example, to make my point very clear, Botswana has got a lot of diamond. And diamond within the African continent would be processed in Africa. The DRC has got a lot of forests. Our furniture could either be done there, or it could be done in some of the neighboring countries for the African continent. Gold and other could be processed in South Africa, because we're already ahead of some of the other African partners. Things like that. Those things must change, because, and I also don't want to make a long turn this into a long speech, because the first 50 years of Africa, the attention of the leadership was on liberation. The next 50 years, which would be Agenda 53,
2063 must focus on development. It must be in the terms and conditions of African leadership. The second one is on the Young African Leadership Initiative. I also share the sentiments expressed by members that it should not be one country that talks about another continent. We, the United States, want to develop young African leadership, and the next thing should be young Caribbean leadership, young Chinese leadership. You see, the USA must not arrogate to itself that kind of stuff. It is actually very unfortunate. Now, it has been changed, we're told, into the Mandela Washington Fellowship. I have no problem with the internationalization of Mandela. The United Nations already have declared that we have this International Mandela Day, and we are doing one that day. The issue here, you have spoken about, you have said the President has called for inclusivity. I don't know what that means. For me, I don't know what is about the inclusivity. For me, it should have been, we were taught value education. You should see where, if you understand where I come from. Bantu education meant that there was a, all go to school, but the curriculum for the white children, for the Indian children, for the colored children, and for the African children, is not the same. In the same history, same biology, the amount of knowledge that they must get is not the same, and there was a good reason for her to do that. Now, what is the curriculum? Who has designed it? What kind of a youth must it produce for the future? In which university? And what is the stance of that particular university? You see, the South African universities are not the same. We even know which universities produce the people who are leading the country. But we know who came from which universities, and those who school in certain universities in certain periods also have particular ideological views and even views about both South Africa, the continent, and so on. Now, for me, the curriculum, the person who designs the curriculum for this, that would be the issue for me. The last one is that I don't agree with the observations by Honorable Monsani with regard to the President addressing the press club. I think if the press club is the most influential lobby group in the United States, and I've started with if. And if our president, of all the other presidents, was singled out to come and speak both for South Africa and for the African continent, then it is an achievement for me. And the reason being that it means the president has been able to market in terms of economic diplomacy, in terms of creating perception both about South Africa and the continent on many things. One of which is that we are concentrating on development, on infrastructure for South Africa and for the African continent. But also, most importantly, I think he has been able to bring out a positive and a good image of both South Africa and the African continent. And you do need, as an African continent, someone, and some people are saying maybe it should have been Mandela almost all the time, someone to speak for the African continent so that our country understands the African continent in the manner that it must understand, particularly where we want to promote Agenda 63. But it's for the whole African continent. So, over to you, Minister, and your official Bangazi is long. We're left with the next item, which is the five services. Over to you. There's a one with the Baba Jan.
Sure. Thank you. I will respond to many of the questions and comments that I'm able to. and others will be responded to by my colleagues on my left. Let's begin with the Honourable Khalele. We take the point about the exclusion of certain African leaders. This point was raised as well, Chairperson, by the Honourable Mulisani. What did South Africa say about that? I don't know. Perhaps on the sidelines, on a one-on-one concerns may have been expressed. I wasn't there, and I'm sure none of our officials were there. Quite often, when President Zuma wants to say something to his counterpart, he'll say it, and the term he uses, four eyes. In other words, four eyes. Only four eyes. Nobody else. In other words, just two. Whether he raised them up, I can't say. But the important point to make here is that this was President Obama's show. And one needs to bear that in mind. Perhaps we could have raised certain objections. Maybe they were. I'm not privy to that particular information. Inclusivity with regard to Young African Leaders Initiative, now known as Mandela Washington. What is it? Okay. I agree with you. I'm saying this now as a politician. I share your concerns. Trouble is, these youngsters were taken there, and they've almost completed the course that they were supposed to. So the question we've got, how do we stop them? Because if America comes here and says to a youngster, yeah, I want to take it Harvard. You honestly believe that youngsters can say, no, go and ask my leaders in Parliament whether I should go. Trust me, that youngsters will go. And so that's the challenge we face. The importance of AGOA to the Republic of South Africa and the African continent, Honourable Maida, we agree with you. Capacitation of the African standby force, I'll deal with that a little later, with your permission. Honorable Mokhlaba raises an important point when he says the summit was a game changer. And perhaps he is correct too when he said the intention of the summit was to counter or minimize the influence of China in Africa. I think that's a fair observation. I think not just America, but other Western democracies have seen China's influence growing in Africa. And understandably, I think the question should be thrown back at them. Why have they allowed it to happen? One of the reasons is because whenever we wanted their assistance, they came with enormous conditions. The very point the Honorable Lakota raised. The conditions were so onerous that the African state said, well, either they went along with it and paid the price, or decided not to follow the conditions. Whereas China did along, I don't know if China took down the conditions. But the alacrity with which African states are grabbing Chinese systems and trade and invest tells the story. So, commitments, the Honourable Mokhlaba says that the commitments should be left to the ambassadors and up to a panel of heads of state. But I don't know, DDG, Mr. Joubert, how we're going to... we could possibly take that forward, Mr. Mokhlaba, and put it to the leadership and see what they say. Perhaps the role of the ambassadors is just to ensure that it reaches the conclusion everyone wants. Did the commitments come with conditions? Probably did. I know that USA is very strong in the whole question of democracy. Congress is has like a zero tolerance approach to providing funding to a country where there's no democracy. They're very strong on that. And so you could go on and on. So I guess the answer is
Although in Swaziland's case, I still have questions, but I raised those on another occasion in a different forum. The Honourable Kalyan raised the question of spousal summit. Now, I'm going to ask DDG to pinch me if I stray into sexist language. It's not my intention. Now, Chairperson, Honourable Members, I think many of you have witnessed and watched heads of state visit other countries and take their spouses with. And the spouse is there essentially as a, what is that term the youngsters use? Yes, they go shopping. Well, you see now, immediately that's what happens. You see, yes, they there to give the royal way, and candy is the term the youngsters use, all derogatory. And I suspect that Mrs. Obama must have looked at this. By the way, she's a high court lawyer, you know, all that. And said, I don't like this. Yeah. So if these spouses come to Washington, D.C., then we are going to have our own chat and deal with concrete issues. I think we need to look at it in that light. That's the first thing. The second thing is, do they only deal with children? I don't believe that. I believe, yes, they did deal with the question of children, but more specifically, the girl child. And I have no doubt they dealt with women's issues, right, and women, in general. I have no doubt about that. Again, we weren't there.
Yeah.
So I'm making a very broad assumption, but the little I've read about Mrs. Obama, that's my take on her. I'm going to ask my colleagues to deal with the reorganization of GSP. I hate acronyms. I don't know what GSP is myself, but which is trial. The Yali renaming, I agree with the Honorable Khadere and the Honorable Kalyan. Oh, well, you want to know what does it mean? Gender Washington? It's Mandela Washington Fellowship. That's the new name. The concern raised by them was the fact that, well, everyone's doing it, you just get Mandela's name and you use it. I'll ask you to deal with the PEPFAR program as well, all right? The Honorable Munsami, Joe Biden's visit to President's Hotel. Okay. I take the point, but I think what happened is that President Zuma got there and he was, as is usually the case, absolutely exhausted. And when Vice President Biden indicated that he would like to meet President Zuma, our people said to him, sorry, it's not going to happen because he's exhausted. And Vice President Biden said, in that case, will it be okay if I meet him in his hotel? That way, there's no moving around, traveling, and so on. If you want to see that as derogatory, fine. It's your view. I don't know what ISA said about the exclusion of African presidents because I wasn't there, and none of that came out in the reports. Reform of the UN Security Council. You know, Chairperson, I'd really like at some point for us to debate this matter, either in this portfolio committee or in the House. Because I have my own personal views about the matter, and I know that Honorable Moussami and other members and comrades have personal views. And aside from our party political positions, which we have and we accept and respect, but perhaps we need to debate this. Personally, I don't think you can reform this stuff. Alright, let me say this. The UN Security Council came about after the Second World War. It had a specific mandate. Okay. And the Honorable Lakota referred to the Cold War. So during that Cold War era, the UN Security Council played a very key and important role. Cold War ended. I believe the UN Security Council has passed its mandate. It's my personal view. Alright? Now, I attended the heads of summit conference of the G77 plus China and Malaysia. Uruguayan president made this point about the UN Security Council. He said, an elderly gentleman, white-haired, he's a socialist, lovely person, walks around wearing tweed jackets, open-neck shirts. He's very relaxed, yeah, comfortable with himself. He made this point. He said, the UN Security Council is a council that promotes insecurity.
Yes.
If you look at its history, in the recent 10, 20, 30 years, that's what it has done. And right now, with all the turmoil happening in parts of the world, where is the UN Security Council? It's shoot still. It's a really fine, you may succeed in reforming it in the manner that Dean suggests. But Chairperson, once you give people power, if I give Sipho Sangwe power, and then next week say, since you have to give it back. He won't give it. Why should he? And so those five permanent members on the UN Security are not going to give off the power that he's given them. And these are just cold hard facts. And at some point, that is why she is saying to you, we need to debate this.
Yeah.
That is my personal view on the UN Security Council. Not the ANCC, of which I'm a loyal member. I accept and respect the position of the ANC. The UN Security Council must be reformed. But really, I think we are howling at the moon. So, I think when the Honorable Moonsami asks the question, who initiates conflict in Africa? And what she's referring to here, and she's being rather sympathetic, unusual for the Honorable Moonsami, is the whole question of rebel groups, who funds them, who sponsors them. I won't say more than that. There's a long history of such rebel groups being funded by Western democracies and other countries. Now, here I take issue with the Honorable Moonsami when she says, don't lie to us, we've not been lied to. Power Africa, why are we establishing it? Obviously, we are not. Power Africa, who are coming into Africa and South Africa and establishing their own head office. And the intention then is to benefit from providing cheaper sources of power in Africa, continent, and in South Africa. Honorable Musima Lakota, Chairperson, raises again the question of conditions and our relationship with China. Thus far, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the World Bank and the IMF and those bodies have used two criteria. One, developed country, and along with that goes certain criteria to determine who is a developed country. The other one is a developing country, and those have certain criteria. But thus far, South Africa has always been viewed as a developing. There are certain people in Congress and in other parts of the world who have now initiated a new category. They refer to us as a middle-income country. I'm not sure, Honorable Porter, what criteria they've attached to that as opposed to a developing country. And on that basis, they are now arguing that South Africa should be graduated out of the goal. In other words, we don't qualify any longer to benefit from the law. That's the argument being used, alright? We are assured by everyone, by the entire delegation who went to Washington, D.C. for the summit, that that argument won't hold. And that the majority of Congress will see our view and renew a goal. The Honorable Porter is correct. It ends by the end of this year. And early next year, sometime, Congress will then vote on renewing the goal. That's my understanding of the process, but there are others who may know better than I do. Fortaleza and the new development bank and the reintroduction of the Cordial, well, what do we do, Honorable Quota? You see, this is the problem.
World Bank and IMF for many years now, developing countries have been pleading with them, please, you set down too many onerous conditions when they come to you for financing and loans. That's been the lament from developing countries for many, many years now. They haven't listened. That's the first thing. Secondly, the United States of America has a veto. It does. It exercises the veto. Alright? So, the Fortaleza summit and the coming around of the new development bank is, however you look at it, a game changer. Alright? And it needs us in the BRICS to make sure that this thing develops properly, such that those countries that are definitely in need of financing have access to it via this new development bank. What that's going to do to the power configuration in the world, I don't know. I leave that to the analysts that we see every day on television and on radio and print media. Is that a reverting to the Cold War? I don't think so. How do you deal with the fact that, and this is a connection, that the USA owes China $27 trillion? What does that say about reversing to the Cold War? It's just a harsh reality. I don't know. These four or five countries got together and decided that they share certain values and that their countries can develop. Their countries can develop on the basis of these shared interests. And that's what it's all about. One last point before I allow you.
Chair, please, before you proceed from the show, could you confirm what I see? Is it correct that there were Congress members who were saying that such countries have hoped to participate or benefit from AGOA when it is renewed?
Mustn't have any relationship with China.
Well, maybe not, but the very US person that was, the report that talked about was, must not be so beholden to China as to constitute competition, something like that. I just wanted to know first and foremost whether that was actual.
Okay.
You know, and then we can, once we know that.
I will ask either Mr. Joubert or DDG someone to respond to that. I honestly don't know. And when I say I don't know, Chairperson, I'm not trying to evade the question. No, question time last week, I stood up and said, I don't know. And a journalist wrote and said, I was trying to evade the question. I wasn't trying to evade the question. Honestly, I didn't know. And would you rather I say, I don't know, or fashion a reply to you, which is an abject lie?
Yes.
So I don't know. I will ask them to respond to that. Conventional summit outcome documents, Honorable Dudley, we take the points you've made, and we appreciate comments you've made. But it is normal practice in these summits, as was explained by Mr. Joubert, that there are people who sit behind the scenes and they negotiate. We have people, it's usually the ambassadors who do that. As part of their makeup, they have to be negotiated. And it's hard negotiation. So that at the end of the summit, the summit then presents a summit document, right? Setting out what came out of the summit. That's the normal practice throughout the world, conventionally. In this case, there was no summit document. Like I said, it was President Obama's show, and his purpose was to deal with the issues that we presented to you today.
Well, the question asked by
one of the quarter, he just moved out now for whatever. You can respond to him. Honorable Sami will whisper to him what you said.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, committee members, for your comments, and of course we do appreciate those who also congratulated us on what we tried to do. It's difficult to say something after Deputy Minister Landers, you know. I feel a little bit like the eighth husband of Elizabeth Taylor on a wedding night. What do you do to impress? Anyway, I will go through these.
Can I call the teacher later to order, please? I'm sure he has not felt the same way after the many women that the eighth husband has been with prior to his wife.
I will take that on the journey. Thank you, Chair. I will, as I said, it will be difficult to add anything to Deputy Minister Landers, but I will try to add, and of course I will ask my colleague Arnold Lyle to also fill in. I think what we need to say when we start that is we need to be perhaps very honest. Many of these questions are very, very bad. And we need to acknowledge the fact that some African leaders were excluded. But I think all these questions that are so extremely important, especially as highlighted by Honorable Radebe and also Honorable Mansami, were the same issues that confronted our own leaders, our own presidents and ministers when they decided, will they go to the US or not for this summit. And in fact, it's those issues that were also confronted by many African leaders. Are we going to this despite the fact that some of us were not allowed? I will not second guess what our principals decided, but to say that the US is a destination for about $70 billion of our exports. We received $250 million from PEPFAR for our medical challenges in South Africa. We received 340,000 US tourists per annum in South Africa. I think if we look at our national goals and our domestic priorities of job creation, of creating a better future for our people here in South Africa, then there's perhaps the possibility that we could say that our leaders decided to go to the summit because there's value in attendance for their constituencies. Now, on that note, perhaps let me just say then that I thank you for the comments, Honourable Radebe. We agree that the GOA is a lot of work to be done, and especially by our colleagues in the Department of Trade and Industry. They will continue to work on the ground and do those work, those efforts that will see to it that we go into the next phase of AGOA and that AGOA is continued in a seamless and timeless fashion. We will take back the question about what the Mandela Foundation consulted. Of course, we have the privilege of working directly with some of the Mandela family members who are now also in our diplomatic corps. Honourable AGOA is important. Criteria for the young selection and the capacity for standby. We take all those comments by you. We will take them back. Mahalapa, Honourable Mahalapa. Mohalapa, sorry. Chair, I think it is perhaps worthy to mention that we would like to see what the US did in terms of the summit, more of an acknowledgement of Africa's importance on the global scene more than anything else, even our counter influence for the China in Africa. But The implementation, we will take that issue or the suggestion of the forum of head of state, we will take that back to our head office mention it to our ambassador in Washington, Ambassador Rasul. Socioeconomic issues and human rights issues, I'm going to ask Arnold to just comment on that perhaps because there were civil society engagements on these issues. Do you want to do it now, Arnold?
In the margins, as you indicated, they address issues, for example, around illicit financial flows from the continent. The chairperson of the AU Commission, Dr. Dlamini Zuma, forcefully addressed the matter. Issues around human trafficking, gun smuggling, etc. So these events were able to culminate in the outcomes that we listed there. So these issues were addressed around the summit. In relation to the exclusion of African countries, I should mention that our department, through the Director General, tabled this matter at the AU Summit in Malabo and said that what is our position, seeing that the US is not working through the African Union, but rather inviting countries individually. And countries said they will honor the invitation individually, irrespective. And so South Africa was, I think, in the position that it could either say that it is not going to participate, and seeing that and other countries would participate, but what would be the consequences, especially with the sword essentially hanging over South Africa about the threat of graduating us from AGOA. So I think our leadership probably considered all those issues, those questions. With regard to the conditions of AGOA, it is true that AGOA is sometimes they refer to it as a gift to Africa. It is not reciprocal. And so there are conditions attached to it, and of course, members of the U.S. Congress, there are constituencies in the Congress representing certain interests, business interests in the U.S., who are looking at all these countries and how these countries gain duty-free access to the U.S. market, and in return they don't get any access. And so, for instance, in Delaware, which is a poultry-producing state, they made a big noise about South Africa having anti-dumping tariffs on their poultry exports. And so that issue they highlighted forcefully. One of the other criteria in the AGOA legislation is that countries must have what they call a favorable investment climate. And so under those, they can throw in any number of things.
Favorable
investment climate. And so they were able to point to various what they call issues that impede the environment and is a threat to South Africa, to U.S. investment in South Africa. The security bill, BEE, the mineral resources amendment bill. But our department, through our leadership, forcefully addressed the issue and said, if you raise the issue of poultry exports, let that be exclusive. Do not add any other conditions. And I think that message was conveyed forcefully through the President's high-level engagements. And the President was confident that South Africa would not be graduated. Of course, the poultry lobby would continue to lobby for access, and DTI is addressing that issue. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much. The discussion has been very good, such that I now issue a decree for a human rights break for about 10 minutes. Is she ready outside?
How do you
Oh, who may be smoking.
The next presentation is going to be on the SADC Summit. There is a SADC Summit. We will then defer to the Deputy Minister to walk us through. And once again, he will be keeping us set by officials. Leveraging the region's diverse resources for sustainable economic and social development through beneficiation and value addition. In line with this theme, Summit underscored that regional economic integration must be underpinned by a developed industrial base to enable value addition and to increase regional competitiveness in global trade. What we'd like to make, and this is just by the way, so that although South Africa and Zimbabwe share the same position on issues such as Palestine, we do differ when it comes to certain economic issues. At the expense of the SADC trade protocol and non-compliance thereof, Zimbabwe still continues with their aspirations of enhancing relations with countries in the East. Generally, compliance of the SADC trade protocol is fundamental towards regional economic integration and non-adherence to the prescripts is worrying. As you may be aware, the regional indicative strategic development plan is the regional blueprint guiding SADC's future direction. It provides SADC member states with a coherent and comprehensive long-term developmental agenda on social and economic policies. This regional blueprint was approved at the Summit of SADC Heads of State and Government in 2003 and launched in March 2004 in Arusha, Tanzania. Despite SADC's goals, challenges such as uneven development remain between SADC member states and within the Southern African Customs Union. South Africa needs to develop a strategy that is aligned to the National Development Plan to guide our engagement with SADC. It is important that South Africa determines how much we are prepared to invest in other trade countries and what potential trends may arise as a consequence. Summit agreed that market integration in SADC was a crucial building block for the establishment of what is called the Tripartite Free Trade Agreement between SADC, the East African Community, and the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa. Chairperson, honorable members, integration is the key aspiration of our region, yet it's difficult given the realities in SADC. The African Union's Agenda 2063 is guiding the continent, and similarly SADC is developing a strategy and roadmap for Vision 2050, a long-term development plan. In the area of democracy and good governance, Summit congratulated Malawi, South Africa, and Swaziland for holding peaceful elections. The forthcoming elections will be held in, and I'd like you to take a note of these, Mozambique on 15 October, Botswana on 24 October, and Namibia on a date yet to be confirmed. Chairperson, honorable members, Durko will be requesting 5 members of Parliament to form part of the South African contingent to be deployed as part of the SADC election observer mission to these elections. Yeah. With regard to peace and stability, Summit noted the resolution of the Malagasy political deadlock and positive developments in peace supporting efforts in the DRC. Firstly, on Madagascar, Summit urged all stakeholders to adhere to and ensure full implementation of the SADC roadmap and committed to support dialogue, national reconciliation, and national building processes and positive development. Two, on the DRC, Summit endorsed the decision by the last joint SADC Interministerial Committee on the Great Lakes region, the ministerial meeting, that the voluntary surrender and disarmament by the FDLR, that is another rebel group, shall be done within 6 months. Summit also encouraged the coalition government leaders of Lesotho to continue their efforts to find a lasting political solution to the current impasse and underscored SADC's commitment to support the leaders of that coalition government. South Africa hosted a ministerial meeting on 31 August to address issues related to recent events in Lesotho. Chairperson, honorable members, there is a need for capacity to resolve conflict when it arises. Hence the establishment of the Mediation Support Unit and the appointment of a panel of elders. The Media Reference Group, as well as South Africa's ongoing capacity building initiatives to train mediators and negotiators, including women. Summit urged member states to continue putting in place measures to prevent the outbreak of the Ebola disease and to effectively contain it in case of an outbreak in the region. South Africa committed itself to share its technical capacity on the Ebola virus disease. With regard to food and nutrition security situation in the region, Summit noted that humanitarian assistance and malnutrition still remain a challenge, in spite of an increase in food production during the 2013-14 growing season. Honorable members, during our tenure as chairperson of the Organ Troika, we will support peace efforts in the DRC and encourage political dialogue, the restoration of constitutional order, and a peaceful resolution of the political impasse in the Kingdom of Lesotho. We will also prioritize the full implementation of the SADC roadmap in consolidation of the peace process in Madagascar. Summit also concluded with the signing of the following legal instruments. 1. Protocol on the Tribunal in the Southern African Development Community. 2. Protocol on Environmental Management for Sustainable Development. 3. Protocol on Employment and Labor. And 4.
the Declaration on the Regional Infrastructure Development. Although the protocol and the tribunal have been signed, more work needs to be done. South Africa, honorable members, Jefferson, is the biggest financial contributor to the SADC Secretariat and should therefore identify appropriate officials to assist in the establishment of its financial management systems, that is SADC's financial management systems, as well as influence policy and contribute towards the implementation of programs, both political and economic. Chairperson, I want to hand over to DDG Dolo to take this report further before I hand back to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Jim. Honorable members, thank you very much for making this time for us. I think the GM has covered most of the issues. I'll just go into one or two so that we don't have can get your questions. But before you, if you allow me, just to clarify the issue which was raised before about the AU members being invited by a partner, and in this case it was the US, and how it functions, so that there's clarity. Most of the time, when a host country invites AU members, it is decided at that point whether it's a multilateral meeting or it's a bilateral meeting. If it is a multilateral meeting, the AU members then decide and work out with the host country what the agenda would be, the format would be, and what the expected outcome. But when it's a bilateral, and usually this has been, it comes many times when a country invites African Union members. The country will say, as far as we're concerned, we're inviting African leaders, which is why then the issue of moral policies comes in, where they say all African leaders we work with, but we invite them on bilateral basis. It's just that you come to a summit together because it's convenient that way, and then you'll be able to talk to each other, but the agenda will be on bilateral basis. So the agenda is usually defined by the host country, and then the issues are just discussed in general terms, but also then the AU members will be the ones who sort of, if I can use the word, caucus among themselves on how to approach the meeting if it's treated as a bilateral. When it's multilateral, the AU members always insist that whatever is discussed should be based on what they have already committed to at the AU. So then it becomes clear that there's nothing else in that meeting which would be suggested which is outside of what it has committed to and agreed to at the AU level. So in this instance with the US, it was defined as a bilateral because the issue of not inviting some of the leaders was discussed at length. Because some of us and many other African countries were saying if a host country is going to decide who comes and not comes, then what's the point? And then it was at that point that the delegation was sent to engage the U.S. about the nature of the meeting and how it's going to work. And at that point is when they said it is going to be on bilateral basis, although you've been invited, because the impact America wants to make is going to be Africa-wide. And I just wanted to clarify so that you don't go away thinking that the African just said you can stay in your corner and say you don't want to come and somebody else doesn't come, will go. There was a lot of discussion and deliberation at that point. And this is a challenge which we face in all meetings of all agenda issues of African continent. On the SADC Summit, Your Excellency, as GM has pointed out, really you can look at it as being structured into two parts. The first one being institutional, the second one broader regional integration issues, and security and deepening of democracy in the continent. The GM has pointed out the fact that we received an audit report and board of auditors report as well on the health of the organization, the SADC Secretariat, and how the finances are utilized and how the programs are implemented. You recall, your honorable members, that the SADC Secretariat receives donations from what we call cooperative partners, the donor and the member country. So on those bases, then the Secretariat helps the members of the EC to implement the programs and utilize the money. Most, the thing is the recurring is the fact that there are always conditionalities. Some of the donations received from elsewhere, and it becomes sometimes impossible to address priority areas. And that's one of the areas which the Secretariat has been again reminded that they must go back and come up with a strategy and a proposal on how we should deal with the matter as a SADC member. But the main issue really is about the capacity of SADC members to pay and be responsible for their own programs and agenda, because then you will not have the problem about donors deciding what you should do and not do. And once those, there's a lot of studies which have been done both at a level and a SADC level in terms of what could be the alternative measures of receiving funding. Is there a way that we can contribute differently so that we are able, as member states, to deal with the challenges we face? The Secretariat is supposed to come back with the strategy as we go forward. Integrating, DM already pointed out the issue about the trade protocol which was signed long ago and is being implemented. And in some areas, we just see with some countries that they don't comply with the trade protocol, and it affects South Africa being one of the countries or the only one which is the highest developed in the region. If they choose another product, it's okay, but if they choose it at the expense of South Africa and also at the expense of the agreement we have reached as SADC, then it becomes a problem. But the positive thing, the positive issue is that other countries like Seychelles are still acceding, because most of them, the only countries which have not acceded to the protocol, is just for obvious reasons, and Angola, which already can be regarded as still emerging from the area of conflict. GM spoke about the fact that issues of integration are not only now looked at within the region itself, but also include other regions. And there's a lot of work which is being done. And one could look at this within the bigger context and the vision of Agenda 2063, where the idea is that the whole continent would be integrated. And basically, it makes sense that you have a region which is integrated, Africa as being the region for development, rather than looking elsewhere. The RISDG, GM again pointed out on this one that this is the one key plan which SADC has been utilizing to prioritize its agenda items and programs. And so it has been revised now, and what was the receipt of the report from the team and the minister has been looking at the plan from 2015 to 2020. And the suggestion as it stands now is that the priority for the region should be justice development and market integration, infrastructural development, to support regional integration, peace and security, social and human development. And really, the issue is, and I'm sure anybody can ask questions, fine, we will see this and say this all the time, will we be able to deliver and implement as expected? Again, the issue is about capacity to implement, and also how do you prioritize the priorities? How do you make sure that if you you prioritize this program now, you'll be able to make an impact which is going to be impact on all others in terms of development, so that after 5 years' time, we are in a better place in terms of that. The Ministers of Trade have been asked to look at the program so that we know firstly that we have the capacity as member states to deliver this on this plan. Secondly, that the Secretariat is supposed to help the member states to have the capacity. Are we structured correctly to deal with it? So the ministers of trade have been assigned to do that. As I pointed out to Chairperson, this should be seen within the context and the ambitions of which are outlined in Agenda 2063. And SADC is in the process of drafting its own Vision 2050, which cannot be seen as isolation because it has to be part of what's over the rest within the continent. Ebola, coming to place after the meeting of the ministers, which was in South Africa, really the main issue here was, does the region need to set up a fund to deal with this. They've also assist with whatever resources and resources we have at the university whenever the problem arises in a particular country. What agrees with us? The finance committee should assess how this could be done. But also in the presentation, it was noted that we have, SANEC already has a fund for communicable diseases which can be utilized for Ebola. But then the finance committee was asked to look at all this and then make a proposal to SANEC how to deal with it. In the meantime, of course, as we all know, South Africa has dispatched a group of medical practitioners, but also is offering training. But the approach which has been taken in the continent, even in SADC, is that different countries have got different capabilities and capacities. In some instances, you might have specialized doctors or something, in another, you might have enough finances to assist. So in that way, then collectively, you bring whatever you can to make a difference when eliminated. I will not talk about the legal instruments, basic disease, which legal instruments which were signed. Again, this is part of the process of integrating SADC as a region, where then we are able, as members of the region, to agree that this is how, in this particular sector, in this area, we want to work together going forward. The DM has pointed out what the issues are with security. I think I'll point out that the main issue, and I think it was pointed out in the earlier discussion about our own history and ability to really resolve our own conflicts. And when you look at the SADC region relative to other regions in the continent, this is one which is more peaceful and more democratized, really. And so the SADC has set up what is called mediation support unit and preventative diplomatic framework, within which it says it has made a commitment that it will have a group of elders, panel of elders. It's usually former president who can, every time a conflict arises in a place, they can intervene as mediators. But mediators, politicians also need technical support. There's also a reference group of experts, which are nominated by all members of SADC, to also then assist to the mediators whenever they are needed. And what South Africa is committed to is to train a pool of mediators, of women in particular. And the UN has been working with SADC, or has offered. Like it also has a similar structure, which is called mediation support unit, to which it trains, but it also puts whoever has trained on a roster, so that wherever in the world mediators are needed, those people can be taken out of the roster and be utilized accordingly to bring about peace and security in the global space. Implementation resolution 1325 of the UN is about involvement of women in peace and security activities, and summits. In every meeting, this is a report from member countries on how much they've done in terms of involving and supporting women in peace and security activities. And so a decision was taken that a regional action plan will be done, but also it will also relate to the mediation support unit in a broader sense. I'm not going to talk about the date for the election because the minister has set that out. Also, the concern for this, and just to say on the DRC that, and again, the issue was raised earlier on, that the honorable members will recall that the UN MONUSCO force has been in the DRC for many years, and they've not been effective. And unfortunately, that particular eastern part of the DRC riddled by illegal groups which have been pop up all the time, and while the UN is there full time and permanently, just unable to do anything. So what SADC decided to do is to contribute what they call an intervention brigade, and this was at the time when you had one rebel group called M23 which had started terrorizing all the community and started taking over town. South Africa, Tanzania, and Malawi contributed to this force, this troop, and then started asked UN to give a particular mandate which allowed them to actually deal with the river growth. That was done successfully. And when the M23 ran away the river group to neighboring countries of the DRC, then the countries of the Great Lakes approached SADC to say, there are more river groups, we are asking for support. And now that the UN has eventually taken a decision that their forces are going to be actually actively pushing away these groups, we are asking that SADC doesn't come out but help with other river groups. What happened during that time is that the FDR is the one then which said, we're no longer fighting. We these are former Rwandese groups which were pushed out during the genocide time. But they asked the SADC to help them to go back to Rwanda safely. But also now they are asking that SADC should help them to establish themselves as a political party with Rwanda, which means SADC needs to facilitate the negotiations between their return to Rwanda and also the establishment of themselves as a political group. Rwanda doesn't believe that they need. Rwanda is afraid that they want to keep on terrorizing. DRC is worried that as long as the FDR members are within DRC, Rwanda will continue attacking DRC, saying that they are attacking FDR. So it's a complex, which I'm sure honorable members history, which you know about. But the fact of the matter is that SADC has argued that since the FDR has held its hand up...
Summarizing,
okay.
Because we... by 10 to 1, the meeting at 1.
Okay. So basically, the process then is... SADC making sure that this group disarms accordingly to ensure also that our intervention doesn't have to be involved in a war which is unnecessary. But also at a high level, then there's an intervention in talking to the different countries involved and their presidents about how this should be managed successfully. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It was a slip of a tongue when you accidentally called me Excellency. I did not intervene because the baby has a good way of saying it. You know that? The borrowed horns don't speak. I want to invite comments and questions and opinions from our members.
Thank you very much. Let me welcome the presentation. Just to make two comments of congratulations. I think one is the issue of women mediators. I think we as a committee we should welcome that. The fact that, you know, your branch has got training for women mediators. They don't cause the conflict, but they always get the brunt of the conflict. So it's good that they can even mediate this conflict that they do not usually cause. And secondly, just to welcome the Deputy Minister's issue on candidacy diplomacy, the effect of our contribution to SADC and identification of officials to assist and capacity that. I think we've been calling that as a committee, you know, to say that we need to make sure that we don't only contribute to this multilateral forum, but we influence them. And we need to influence them by fielding capable officials to fill these positions. And thirdly, the issue of domestication. This legal instrument that we signed, the challenge is domestication. But what is being done? I know it's a difficult one to enforce domestication in other SADC countries, but it's one of those things that are holding back development and integration. is that some of these legal instruments are not domesticated. And has it come up in under discussion, and what is the resolution of the heads of state? The issue of the spirit trade area, it should have been here by March. I think part of the problem might be domestication. Why is it not yet there? And the discussion on the infrastructure for intra-trade in the region. What is the status quo as far as that is concerned? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to also appreciate the support which is coming from the department. But first of all, Chair, I think that as the committee, through the officials of IRC, we must really congratulate the brigade which was sent to the DRC as IR now, not as the Portfolio Committee of Defense, because they did exceptional work there in the DRC. So I remember that the problem of many years was resolved by the Royal Park attack helicopter. And our sniper who could take out a person at 2.143 kilometers. It was the sixth longest range in the world. So it shows that our boys and girls are well trained in the United Kingdom. We must really appreciate it, because by doing that in support of the work of the DERCO, I think that we as the Portfolio Committee, we cannot overemphasize that. Chairperson, on the issue, I'm worried with the issue of regional integration. I don't know how far is the issue of the standard protocol on trade and services, because I think that as the Parliament ratified it, was last year or 2012, I don't remember when, because if the other countries could have ratified that, really the issue of regional integration would have taken a leap forward. I don't know how far is it, how they're dealing with it. The other one, Chair, is the issue of the Ebola disease, virus disease. I feel like it's already there now in the DRC. It's no longer now the issue of Western Africa. It is now within our region. So it means that if it is within our region, the possibility of coming up with this is very easy. It's very easy. I think that I can see the measures which are being placed, but whatever measures are there now, because the migration of the people which we demand, that the people must flow freely between within the region. But with this tech now, what extraordinary measures did they put in place so that it is really contained? Because if we cannot contain it, all the gains we've made can be wiped away just overnight. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Munda.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just concur on the issue of the appointment of women mediators. I think it is a step in the right direction. For obvious reasons, Chair. And you know, one of the reasons I think is because we know that... Okay. And I think one of the challenges that we have and we acknowledge is that most of the conflicts have been the inspiration of men. But I think that in as much as we don't want to appreciate, but you know, the point I want to raise on the issue of the rebels is not necessarily, I think I agree on the work that has been done in the DRC, the group that has been sent to resolve the issue of the rebels there. But I think the deeper question we must start ask ourselves is around the issue of whether these rebels are really fighting and what kind of cause are they fighting. You know, the issue of resources and the fight over resources in the continent is something we haven't been able to sufficiently been able to protect and guard, and it goes back to the question I think that the Deputy Minister was answering me earlier when he said I was being diplomatic about who the initiator of conflict are in the continent. And I think that question must just be... But the reason I'm raising this is in the main cause of the issue also on regional integration. I was trying to look at the numerous economic blocks that there are and the different trading infrastructure in the continent amongst all the states. And the kind of relationships on, small exchange of goods. My question would be, the extent of the program of which there has been effort made on saying how far are we to resolving this impasse in integration that we have won, particularly on the issue of infrastructure of a proper transport system within the continent. I don't know if it is just something that we need to get progress on that so that we're able to get a sense. But I think on the issue of the elders, you know, I don't know. We are such a youthful continent. No, I'm not an elder. I'm speaking on behalf of the youth. But I want us to be really realistic about it here. We are a youthful continent. There is an irritation around the manner in which the continent and the state are being, and you can see it's happening all over with the elderly. Whether you want to believe that the South African phenomenon, it is a reality in the continent. And then you have elders who are resolving problems of the future of very impatient young people. So I'm just asking whether the elders are without offending anyone who is younger than me in this room. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report from the department. But Chairperson, I find it very ironic that the SADC could actually congratulate Swaziland on the elections. Because I ask myself, who the MPs in Swaziland representing? Are they representing the king? But what? It's okay. The other issue, Chairperson, on the issue of Ebola. I think a day or two ago, the Doctors Without Borders were on record indicating that we are losing the battle against Ebola around Liberia. So I concur with Honorable Khadebe that we should actually increase our effort in trying to kill the disease. Thank you very much.
Okay. Over to the department. If there are things to speak to.
Just one question. Honorable Minister, one day you're going to be held up.
Yeah.
They will understand.
No, hands on that one. I was forgiven because I think she's a progressive feminist, if she's a feminist.
Thank you for the response.
I forgot to make my own issues, right? And there was one, not two. It was on whether the issue of Khalafa spoke about infrastructure. I wanted to speak about development in general, whether in the wake of Agenda 2063, the SADC summit discussed development for the SADC region, which is part of going to Agenda 2063. I know there are milestones that you can put there. Now, each region, your ECOWAS, your East African, your SADC, must look at the enabling sector. Now, I just also wondered why they have Vision 2050 for that, when they have Vision 2063.
Yeah.
Now, on the issue of the rebels and the militias and all of those, we will not get there by 2063 to have the African want if you have these unpatriotic Africans peddling conflicts and all of these things anywhere within the African continent. And I think, Gilles Le Atterrick step by form, but just deal with it very mentally. But you will not get there. Omuyomuntu ufilanga pa in charge of a mineral rich corner somewhere inside in Lesotho, somebody in Piazza, somebody in Angola, somebody in Swaziland the next day. So you spend more time defending yourself rather than you looking. Over to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some of the questions need more time. I will suggest that perhaps the committee could consider a presentation just on the first project in partnership. Because on that we have infrastructural master plan for Australia, we also have for the continent, infrastructural development. And you recall, Chairperson and honorable members, that our president is the champion for infrastructure development in Africa.
Mm.
He's also the champion for the North-South corridor within this region. So he coordinates all infrastructure development within the continent, and those usually have got another champion leader within that region because by his nature, infrastructure cuts across different countries.
Mm.
And in every AU meeting, then there's a report which is made. You recall, Honorable, that our priority within this region was dealing with this bridge airport or customs that area.
Mm.
Because once you solve the problem there and the limits, then within the region, the movement of goods will be much, much better. And that has been one of the priorities of the infrastructure development. But I'll be keen to come back and make a real open, a broader presentation, but more specific to the, and show you the different areas and the progress in terms of infrastructure development. Domestication of instruments, I agree fully. Usually, countries or their presidents do not sign the instrument at summit level unless they have gone through their national processes. There is one thing to ratify, but also to also just sign and ratify and do all those then for implementation.
Yep.
And I think it's one of those things which really we agree it's a challenge in the continent or in the region because there are always the competition is high from elsewhere.
Mm.
Trading in services, the protocol that was signed, the only reason we as South Africa did not sign is because at the time when it has been ratified and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Every time when it was supposed to be signed, the summit held in Maputo, then we had Marikana, and the president had to leave before the summit finished, so he was not able to sign. What happened this time, again, he was ready to sign, but the secretary made a mistake. In terms of advertising others, you didn't see this one because it's the only one outstanding in terms of any of. But in terms of international process, we are already a member of those who are implementing this. It's just a formality in terms of making sure that it happens. Ebola, again, I would not even pretend to say where this process is now since we have received a report from the Minister of Health, but I would like to argue that he be asked to come and present us where this process is. So, because it changes on daily basis. Elders, I think that's a very good point you made. And really, it's not either or. It's about consciously and committing resources to ensuring that young people develop and are able to gain from the wisdom of those who are elders before the natural attrition takes place. So the training and the development is about that. It's about making sure that the women and young people are able to work with the those that are more expensive for the most of them, so that where the others are not there, the others can take over. That's the kind of giving a place nationally to saying, let's make sure that we don't lose the wisdom which we have in this particular era. Now that we are in a different era altogether. I'm not going to comment on Swaziland. We've got this trade protocol in terms of free trade, and the challenge of having some countries belonging to different ranks is a reality. And that's what the day we have integration of the whole continent, it may be better, because we won't have all the different countries below to that regional body
in the regional body, which is why for us it's so important to start having these different regions coming together, the three regions I spoke about earlier on. I think I've left anything. 2050, really, Your Excellency, about trying to mobilize SADC within the broader context so that we don't only pay for 5 years each time, but we also have a vision. We should be located within the 2063 vision. However, the 2050 in particular was chosen, I'm not sure. But the idea is that we have a vision beyond that 5 years. I'm not sure if I've left anything else, other than I took it and I really appreciate the comments and congratulations.
Thank you very much. On a very light note, I heard Dr. Zwaledi saying that Ebola is not Ebony. So you can take comfort that you don't get it because someone has got Ebola in a room like this. He then said, but you must work very hard to get Ebola. Whatever he meant.
Okay.
Because it's expensive fluids and all those things.
Okay.
So yeah, if you touch the body of a tablet when it's on, that's when you get it. So at least that's the way it is actually containable. But if this suggestion is that he be invited, that's because he can only be invited by the portfolio committee on the health, we would rather say he addresses Parliament, the entire Parliament on Ebola, rather than a portfolio comment. Now, there are just two things, one or two things, I think, going forward. We will find time and space to invite you to make a presentation on the NEPAD processes. And
where's our researcher now? He must tell us, he documents all the Redwood Declaration.
Because, Lana, you are saying that only the Kingdom of Lesotho, South Africa, as current chair, is facilitating the implementation of the event.
And we don't have that.
As well as the SADC roadmap on Madagascar.
I think, Minas Tolelo, Lana, they just sent it to the box offices of the region, all of the members, so that we can read that.
Anything else?
No, Chair, I just wanted to say that,
yes.
You know, my understanding with an elder, I think even if you're still young, you can be an elder. I think you are matured, diplomatic wise.
People.
Yes.
Let's leave that for a topic called the Great Debate.
Yeah.
Okay, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, your official, honourable members, and our officials. Thank you very much for it.